We'll hear arguments next in 76-761, Bellew against Georgia. Mr. Clutter, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I would first of all like to apologize both on my own behalf and on behalf of Mr. Smith for the lateness of the motion which allowed me to argue this case. Mr. Smith is involved in another matter, and it was only at the end of last week it became apparent that that might interfere with argument here. I apologize again for the lateness of that, for any inconvenience that may cause the Court.
The only convenience, it's
thank you, sir.
To the Court at all.
This case involves a conviction from the state courts of the state of Georgia of two counts of distributing obscene material. The two counts are both predicated upon the same material and involves two exhibitions of the film Behind the Green Door in the same theater on two different dates. The petitioner was tried on these two different counts before a five-person jury, pursuant to the authority of a Georgia constitutional provision, which we challenge here. He was convicted. The judgment of conviction was affirmed in the Georgia Court of Appeals in the opinion and judgment which we challenge here. There are three arguments on this petition for certiorari. I think, in all candor, that only two of them are susceptible to any elucidation on oral argument. The third question relates to the obscenity vel non of the films involved in this case. We certainly do not abandon that argument or in any way retreat from it, but I don't think that it could really be expounded upon much in oral argument. We submit that question on the arguments submitted in the brief, and I would not choose to present any oral argument on that unless the Court has any specific questions. The other two questions involved are the five-person jury, the constitutionality of the five-person jury before whom the petitioner was tried, and the constitutionality of the jury instructions, which allowed a conviction on the basis of not only actual knowledge of the materials, but constructive knowledge of the materials. The five-person jury question was one which was specifically reserved by this Court. Five persons or less that was specifically reserved by this Court in Williams versus Florida, which approved a six-person jury and said that did not violate the Sixth Amendment right as applied to the states through the 14th, reserving the question of whether any lesser number might so violate it. As is argued in the brief, I think there's just one point that needs emphasis in this case, which differentiates it from cases like Williams, and that is that we're dealing with a determination of obscenity, and we're concerned in this case thus not only with whether a five-person jury is equally able to determine guilt or innocence as a six or as a 12-person, but whether a five-person jury is equally as able to delineate the applicable community standards in the determination of obscenity. I think that the sensitive First Amendment arguments here differentiate this case from those like Williams. Those are not the only values upon which this argument is predicated, but I think they are a separate and distinct line of argument.
When you're suggesting that this claim about a less than 12 jury is focused just in First Amendment cases, is that it?
I'm suggesting alternative arguments to support the petition's position, Your Honor, that even if the Court were to find that five-person juries might be constitutionally acceptable as a Sixth Amendment matter in cases not involving the First Amendment, that it should find that five-person juries are not constitutionally acceptable in First Amendment cases involving a determination of community standards.
Because not an appropriate representative of the cross-section of the community?
That's correct, Your Honor. That position is espoused. This. Pursuant to this
could
Court's...
Could you make that argument equally to the effect that 24 would be more constitutional, even though we've never used 24-member juries?
I don't know if more constitutional would be the appropriate word to describe that.
Sure,
I think...
But you're saying this is not constitutional to use less than 12 in a First Amendment.
we're submitting the argument that it's not constitutional to use less than 12 in a First Amendment case in the event that the court finds that argument without merit, that the drop in the number from 6 to 5 is even more important and even more suspect in a First Amendment case than it would be in another case.
Well, does this suggest, Mr. Clutter, that bench trials would be inappropriate for determination of obscenity? A single judge cannot?
Your Honor, should the defendant invoke his right to a jury trial, we would most surely submit.
If
he didn't, he certainly has the right to submit determination of his guilt or innocence to a single judge.
Don't you have bench trials in Georgia that determine obscenity, not in a criminal case, but in some kind of civil cases?
Yes, sir.
What about that? Would a single judge be able to determine obscenity?
Yes, sir. Pursuant to the civil statutes present in Georgia, a single judge.
You don't think that would present any First Amendment problem?
I think it does, Your Honor, but I have to admit in candor that that's...
That's because of a waiver of your constitutional right.
I'm talking about a civil case.
Your Honor, in a civil proceedings, even
without a waiver, I believe, although I can't state with certainty, that it's possible to over a civil defendant's objections to try a obscenity case before a judge and not before a jury.
I thought we'd had cases from Georgia precisely of that kind, a judge... A trial on determination of obscenity for purposes other than criminal.
Your Honor, the only case I know of in that regard, there were cases here where Paris Adult Theater versus Slayton. In that particular case, which Robert Smith did argue before the court, I believe the defendant waived his right to a jury trial. I'm not sure if I'm not positive of that, and I don't wish to state that as a fact, but I believe that in that case, it was, I guess, in the nature of what we call a test case. He wanted to determine the constitutionality
of civil case in almost any state. A nuisance case addressed to an equity court, it would very likely be a single judge enjoining the display of a film or a book, would it not?
Most probably, Your Honor, I know of no nuisance statute that's still extant that's held constitutional. The nuisance statute we have in Georgia as applied to obscenity has been held unconstitutional by the Georgia Supreme Court. And I think that nuisance statutes as applied to First Amendment materials have met a similar fate in all the other states that I know of. I don't know of any that remains. I know they have been struck down in Michigan, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Colorado, California, Nebraska. Perhaps other states. I don't know, again, whether juries were available in those other jurisdictions. All I know is that, and under Georgia's, I think that perhaps a single judge could determine it even over a defendant's objection, but that statute's no longer in existence.
Of course, there's at least one dissent in this court, Kingsley Books, back in 56 or 57. That was a civil case.
Yes, sir.
Where it was suggested that the determination of obscenity ought always be, bench trial or otherwise, by a jury.
Yes.
Because of its function as cross-section of the community, but as far as I know, that idea has not caught on.
Yes. Well, Your Honor, I think that argument's taken on more significance post-Miller with the determination by this court that it's not a national community standards, which perhaps one person could as easily guess at as a group of six or even 12 from a local community. When that standard has been replaced by a standard of the local community, and especially with this court's ruling that no evidence on those community standards need be submitted, the juries bring that into the jury room with them. They live in the community, and they bring their own knowledge of the community standards to the room with them. With that standard being applicable, as opposed to some national standard which they might only hear evidence on or guess on, I think that group deliberations are even more important, even more constitutionally mandated.
Wasn't your argument made and rejected in McKinney against Alabama by the majority where we're dealing with a civil nuisance statute?
Your Honor, I don't believe that question was addressed in McKinney. I think that McKinney dealt only with the applicability of a civil determination to another litigant.
Well, you may.
And
well, I think my brother Rankless is right that at least I've forgotten whether it was concurrence or dissent, did address it, but it was not raised.
No, sir.
Decided by the by the court.
So far as I know, McKinney dealt only with the applicability of determination of obscenity to a criminal litigant later and foreclosing that question to him in a later criminal obscenity case. Again, the court in its enunciation in Williams did not make any or did not focus upon or decide the case on the basis of a historical analysis, but instead examined the purposes of the right to trial by jury. And as is submitted in the briefs, I believe that in light of those purposes, both as to the determination of guilt or innocence of this defendant and as to the determination of the community standards in a First Amendment area, that the decrease from 6 to 5, or indeed from 12 to 5, since this is the first time the First Amendment issue has been presented, is constitutionally suspect. If the right to a trial by jury is, as is said in Williams, a safeguard against an overzealous or a corrupt prosecutor, and it separates the defendant from a compliant, biased, or eccentric judge, I think that those values are little served if the compliant or corrupt, biased, or eccentric judge is only replaced by such a jury. I think that the slippery slope argument, which was recognized in footnote 22, is squarely presented here, and I just ask Your Honors to hold that the time has reached to get off the slippery slope, as the court suggested that it would do at the appropriate time in that footnote.
Are you asking that Williams against Florida be overruled?
No, sir. I don't think it necessary to overrule Williams versus Florida. I think that there are two alternative grounds for this particular question, either to hold that Williams is inapplicable as applied to First Amendment cases where, pursuant to Miller, a determination of community standards must be made, or I think that even with Williams extant, the court might merely hold that the further step down the slope that was recognized in that case from 6 to 5 is inappropriate, but it's certainly not necessary in either instance under either argument submitted by this petitioner to overrule Williams. The other question presented relates to the constitutionally accepted minimum standard of scienter in obscenity cases. This question arises because the judge instructed the jury in this case, pursuant to Georgia statute, that the defendant could only be convicted for a knowing distribution of obscene material, but that knowing in this context, and these are the words of the statute, includes both actual and constructive knowledge, and a person has constructive knowledge if he has knowledge of facts or circumstances that would put a reasonable and prudent man on notice as to the suspect nature of the material.
Wasn't the charge constructive knowledge of obscene content?
Yes, sir. That is, again, from the wording of the statute, is what it says. The scienter requirement in Georgia and under the statute is worded as either actual or constructive knowledge of the obscene content.
Well, I thought it was of the suspect content.
Well, Your Honor, under the wording of the statute, and it's set forth in the appendix, it's stated that that constructive knowledge is knowledge of facts or circumstances that places a...
Is it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, it's not in the appendix, but the wording of it...
I thought it was quite important that the charge was that the constructive knowledge was to be of the suspect quality, not of the obscene quality.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a difference. But
yes, there is.
An argument based upon that.
Yes, sir. The constructive knowledge of the obscene content and of the suspect nature of the material is set forth in words in the statute. What the statute says is that one must have knowledge of the obscene content of the material as a term of art.
Were those the instructions to the jury?
Yeah, the instruction to the jury were that element could be met.
Which
merely
element? The suspect nature?
No, Your Honor, the element of knowledge of the obscene content of the material.
What are the instructions here?
Your Honor, the evidence, what?
Of what?
Petitioner's brief.
Thank you.
Petitioner's brief.
Your Honor, it's at the bottom of page 11.
All right.
That the word knowing, as used in the statute, is actual or constructive knowledge of the obscene content.
I see.
But that element could be met merely by showing knowledge of facts or circumstances that would put a reasonable person on notice as to the suspect nature of the material.
I see.
So that it is applied both to the actual and the constructive knowledge standard.
Mr. Clutter, I got lost. You're reading from page 11 of what?
Yes, the brief of the petitioner, Your Honor. It's the bottom of page 11 and the beginning of 12. It's the beginning of that argument section in the brief. I'd like to...
So the instruction was, wasn't it, that he was charged with constructive knowledge that the material was obscene if there was enough information to put a reasonable and prudent man on notice that the material was simply suspect.
That's correct, Your Honor. They were allowed to convict him on that basis, and again, that's the wording of the statute that I've
And you don't seem in your brief or so far in your oral argument to make much of, or unless I misunderstood you, of the use of the word suspect.
Your Honor, I think in light of this court's decision in Hamling, I think that all the court all that the Georgia statute means in that is that the defendant need not have knowledge of the legal status of the material as obscene. And we don't submit that he need.
Well, or even that it's even constructive knowledge that it's obscene, but only constructive knowledge that it's suspect.
Yes, sir.
And which is quite a different word from obscene. It means quite a different thing.
Yes,
it?
Sir. All I wish to state, and the reason that particular element was not stressed in the brief, is that the petitioner does not here contend that he must constitutionally be found to have had knowledge of the legal status of the material as obscene, and that ignorance of the law or failure to brush up on the law of obscenity would not protect him, that he must merely have found to have knowledge of the content of the material and that it falls within a classification that might be obscene. But what the petitioner asserts in this case is that he must have actual knowledge of those materials, not merely that he finds himself in a circumstance where a jury might conclude that someone else should have taken further inquiry.
Do you think there's any difference in the standard to be applied for constitutional purposes to a bookstore proprietor as opposed to a movie house owner?
Your Honor, yes, in the sense that the basic thrust of this argument is one of the chilling effect. I think that the chilling effect in the distribution of books would be even greater because of the longer time required for a cautious bookseller to familiarize himself with his material than for a cautious movie purveyor to sell movies. However, I'm not aware of the factual circumstances under which movies are distributed.
Well, I would think typically a bookstore might well have several thousand titles in it at any given time, whereas...
That's correct.
A movie theater presumably shows one or two shows per night, doesn't it?
Some movie theaters, with the possibility of double features and the multiple theaters that I assume are present here, may have 6 to 12 movies at any given time. But the chilling effect argument as put forth by this petitioner would relate not to his exhibition of the film, but his original selection of it. If a man is sitting in Atlanta and is trying to decide whether or not to order a film to show in his theater, a film with a title such as Carnal Knowledge, which Your Honors are aware of because of Jenkins versus Georgia, he might well, under this statute, not even order that film unless he has a chance to see it. And he might not have a chance to see it before he orders it. And if under this statute he's worried that the mere presence of that title would make him susceptible to criminal prosecutions, then he might well refrain from ordering that film and exhibiting it in his community and thus deprive those members of his community of a chance to see that film merely because that title might later be held by a jury to have put him, were he a reasonable and prudent man, on notice as to some suspect nature of the material. So that it may occur before he even orders the material.
I noticed in your brief you described this film as a nationally acclaimed movie. That suggests an awareness by somebody of what the movie was all about, or would your answer to that be that he didn't take a look at the movie until after the case was brought?
Your Honor, there's no evidence in this record of when he took account of it. If we would go outside the record, I could submit as a member of the court. He did, in fact, not look at it, but I don't think that's important to this decision. It was nationally acclaimed in the same way that Carnal Knowledge was nationally acclaimed, but any individual defendant may not have seen that material or been made aware of circumstances that might later be held to put him on notice to
he
make further...
He was just relying on hearsay,
He's relying on hearsay as to the general course of the film. He certainly wasn't, I'm not even sure how specific that hearsay was. The national acclaim of this film certainly didn't arise until after it had been exhibited for some time, and whether that was present at the time he ordered the film or not, I'm not sure. But even if it were, it was not specific enough, I would submit, to satisfy the constitutional minimum standards of scienter, even were he aware of that hearsay.
Well, you suggested
the fact that this petitioner had been arrested a couple of times for showing this film.
Your Honor, this case involves two different counts of distributing the film. The first on November 9th, 1973, and the second on November 27th, 1973. Those were a couple of weeks apart. As the film after his first arrest was continued to be shown, and he was in the theater and given under the prosecution's theory was a manager of the theater during that period of time encompassing both of those dates.
Which one of those arrests is before us today?
Both of them, Your Honor. They were combined for a joint trial. He was arrested. He was sentenced to 1 year under each count, but those sentences were to run concurrently. He was fined, however, $1,000 on each count, so that we have a punishment attaching to each count separately as it relates to the fines, not as it relates to the time to be served, however. The prosecutor has submitted in his brief that this question has already been answered by this court, and I think I would just like to state briefly why I think it hasn't. His main reliance is upon Michigan versus New York and Ginsburg versus New York that involved two different New York obscenity statutes. The first of those was Michigan versus New York that involved a question by the petitioner very similar to the question presented here, asked this court to delineate the constitutionally acceptable minimum standard of scienter because of the wording of the statute there, which was section 1411 of the New York statute, was fairly similar in authorizing convictions on the basis of constructive knowledge. However, before that issue was addressed by this court, the New York Court of Appeals decided People versus Finkelstein, which is cited in this court's opinion in Michigan, and the People versus Finkelstein decided that limited the scienter requirement to what this court described as a very stringent element of scienter and required knowledge on those who are accused, that only those who are in some manner aware of the character, not should be aware, not were aware of facts or circumstances to put them on notice, but were aware of the content, I mean of the character of the material, are subject to prosecution, and it's aimed thus not at innocent, even stupidly innocent, but calculated purveyance of filth. With that limitation upon the statute in upon section 1411 of the New York Penal Code, this court did not reach, and specifically says at page 511 of its opinion, doesn't have to reach the constitutional minimum, that this statute as limited in this way to those who have knowledge is clearly constitutionally acceptable. That same result was reached in Ginsburg versus New York a couple of years later. That involves section 484 of the New York Penal Code. The only difference from that in the original and the Michigan case was 484 dealt with distribution of material which, although not obscene when judged against the standard of adults, was obscene when judged against the standard of its appeal to children. It was specifically addressed to what today might be called child porn or material which might appeal to children. That had a scienter requirement, again, very similar to that before this court. That was that knowingly means knowledge or reason to know, belief or ground for belief. So I would admit that that is very similar to the standard here. Again, that question was not reached in Ginsburg because, again, the People versus Finkelstein gloss on the statute was held by this court to require that under that gloss that actual knowledge, those who are in some manner aware of the character of the material are subject to prosecution. With that gloss, this again, the court again states at page 644 and 645 of its opinion, it's not necessary to decide whether or not a constructive knowledge requirement is sufficient because in this case there's an actual knowledge requirement. Neither of those cases reach that issue. I think the only other case cited by the solicitor in support of his position in this regard is Rosen versus United States, a 19th century prosecution under the federal statutes, and in which the court said the issue was the inquiry is whether a paper which was mailed is obscene, lewd, and lascivious, and whether it was deposited in the mails by one who knew or had notice of its content. I think, however, taken in context, if you read on from that from the quotation in the case which is cited by the solicitor, the following phrase is that thus someone can be convicted even though he did not regard it as forbidden. I think all this really is in Rosen is a statement that was repeated by this court in Hamling that one need not be aware of the legal status of material as obscene. And I just wish to repeat, the petitioner here does not put forth that position and does not suggest that that position is even necessary to support him in this
Mr.
case.
Mr. Clutter, do I understand you to take the position that if the defendant can honestly testify he never saw the movie, you just avoid seeing it, you'll always have a defense?
No, sir. As stated in here, we admit two things. First, that the state certainly has the right to prove knowledge on the basis of circumstantial evidence, and as this court said in Smith, that the judicial process and its ability to ascertain truth is not foreclosed by someone's denial. That it may well be that a jury could find that a defendant knew the contents of a film, whether he saw it or not. All we submit is that knowledge has to be actual has to be actual rather than constructive knowledge. I think that people know a great many things without seeing them and may know the content of material, and thus someone who purposely refuses to view films before showing them could well be held by a jury to say that the reason he refused to look at them was indeed exactly because he knew what was in them. And all we're arguing in this case is although that may be sufficient.
One other question then, Mr. Clay. You've explained why Michigan and Hamling are not in point. What's the strongest case supporting your position on the Sander issue?
Your Honor, as it relates to constructive knowledge, I know of none that specifically address the question. I think that the wording of Hamling, as it goes toward knowledge, I think supports the position of petitioner. But most strongly, I think, is Smith versus California. The reasoning of Smith is equally applicable to this case, although admittedly to a lesser degree, the chilling effect may not be as strong if someone has no scienter requirement and just can't distribute any material unless he actually reads it. What we have here is a chilling effect that results in the suppression of material, which even in the slightest way may allude toward sex and thus scare off the cautious bookseller, the cautious film purveyor, until he actually has personal knowledge of the film or of the book he distributes. Thank you.
Farr. Mr. Rhodes, excuse me.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My colleague has already expounded on the questions involved. I will go right into the five-person jury question. And under the Georgia law, as authoritatively construed in numerous cases, it has been held that all juries must return a unanimous verdict, whether that be a civil case or a criminal case, and irrespective of the size of the jury. This means that in the case at bar, the jury was in fact charged that they must return a unanimous verdict, and that they must find all of the elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. So that this means that this jury found that Mr. Ballou, in this particular case, participated in the exhibition of this motion picture, that the film was, in fact, obscene, that he knew it was obscene or was aware of facts which would put a reasonable and prudent person on notice as to the suspect nature of the film, which, under the Georgia law, constitutes notice, and that he intended to commit the crimes on both occasions. Now, how many jurors are necessary to afford a fair trial? As already has been discussed, the case of Williams v. Florida, 6 was held to be sufficient in a case, a felony case, where the accused was charged with the offense of robbery, was tried for the offense of robbery, and was sentenced to a life imprisonment. In the case at bar, the maximum imprisonment is 12 months for each count, a misdemeanor offense.
What was the sentence in this case?
12 months on each count. Now, in footnote 28 of the majority opinion in the Williams case, it was written, we have no occasion in this case to determine what minimum number can still constitute a jury, but we do not doubt that 6 is above that minimum. Now, it follows that if 6 is above the minimum, 5 just cannot be below the minimum. There's no number in between. Don't believe
there's any. Well, the question should have been decided then, shouldn't it? I mean, you say that this question was decided.
It was decided
right then and there. Or don't
if, you? If we apply the Williams case to all criminal cases,
yeah.
Yes.
But the court later said the question was open, didn't it?
Well, I'm not familiar with that, Your Honor. That may very well be. In Georgia, the Constitution of the State of Georgia provides that not less than 5 jurors may be used to try misdemeanor cases. The criminal court of Fulton County, which has since been changed to the state court of Fulton County, and in which the court in which this defendant was tried, by statute permitted by the Georgia Constitution allowed misdemeanor cases to be tried by 5-person juries. That has since been changed. It was changed before this case was on appeal, but it has been changed, and now the minimum is in that court. And I know of no other court in Georgia which has fewer than six. The same court.
Well, if this petition were brought to trial today, then in Georgia, how many people would be on his jury?
And this court would be six. As a matter of fact, he was brought to trial this year in another case, and he had six person jury. In the case of Johnson v. Louisiana in 1972, the court there approved the legal maxim that the burden of proof by a state, or that the state can require a burden of proof by more jurors in a more serious case. In other words, the lesser the seriousness of the offense or the less serious punishment by a smaller jury, and the more severe cases by a larger jury. And that system, which the court talked about and apparently approved, provided for a unanimous verdict, juries of five where less serious crimes were involved, by 9 of 12 where more severe crimes and more severe punishment was involved, and a unanimous verdict of 12 in the most severe cases. There has been considerable studies made in recent years on jury size and rule of decision, and I would be the first to admit that they fall on both sides of the fence. There will be a list of numerous studies which will be published this month. I am been notified by authors Tanky and Tanky, a husband and wife team out in San Francisco. Mr. Tanky being a lawyer and his wife being a psychologist, they have formulated an annotated list of some of these studies. It will be printed by the American Psychological Association.
You think we should withhold our decision till that comes out?
No, Your Honor. There are some already out that I would note here. The Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in 1975, volume 32, pages 1 through 14, a study of 6 and 12 person juries involving unanimous and two-third majority rules, reported that neither size nor rule decision affected the decision distribution. In the University of Michigan Journal of Law Reform, 1973, reported that minority jurors and six-member juries participated more in the jury deliberations than did minority jurors and 12-member juries. The same publication in a before and after study of a change from 12 to 6-member juries reported that there were substantial similarity in the results of the verdict. In a publication, Jury Verdicts, the Role of Group Size and Social Decision, rule by Michael J. Sachs of Boston College, copyrighted this year, having been assigned a Library of Congress catalog card number 76-44569, Mr. Sachs reported that there were no significant differences occurring in the conviction acquittal ratio or the proportion of hung juries as a function of jury size, but he did report that smaller juries will lead to a decrease in the number of convictions, or that at least his studies and report made a suggestion that the smaller juries would lead to a decrease in number of convictions.
This is all psychology.
Right. And as I say, there are
And that has,
these,
what, that has what bearing on us?
Empirical data, Mr. Justice Marshall. I'm simply citing, I know that there's others on the other side of the fence, but these appear to bear out my contention that a 5-member jury is sufficient. We called the court's attention to the case of Sanders versus Georgia, which this court denied cert in on the identical question 1 year before the question was cert was granted on the question in this case. That's reported at 424 U.S. 393. The defendant Sanders was tried in the same court, five-person jury, appealed, and cert was denied. On the question of scienter, as has already been stated, the Georgia law requires that in obscenity cases, the defendant be or have knowledge of the obscene nature. The law further provides that knowledge can be actual or constructive, and that constructive knowledge is either is knowledge of facts which would put a reasonable and prudent person on notice of the suspect nature of the material.
Well, that is, that's, that removes it one step, doesn't it? This jury was instructed under the statute, as I understand it, correctly instructed, so far as the statute went, that a person has knowledge of the obscene content of the material if he has constructive knowledge of a suspect nature of the material. That's two big steps, isn't it?
Yeah, so the statute provides...
Not if he has constructive knowledge of the obscene nature of the material, but if he has... He was instructed that he knows what the material is if he has reason to know that it is suspect. Not that he has reason to know what it is.
Well, the Georgia law provides what was charged.
I know that.
If he's aware of the
instructions
facts.
Were in accord with the Georgia statute. But
that's
the
correct.
Question, of course, is whether or not that's a sufficient instruction in view of the First Amendment, isn't it?
That's the question, yes. The petitioner concedes that knowledge, while being required to be actual, can be proved by circumstantial evidence. Now, we submit...
But this jury was instructed that he knew it was obscene if he had constructive knowledge, not that it was obscene, but that it was suspect.
Well, I fail to see a great deal of difference.
Well, the two certainly have quite different meanings, those two words, don't they, even in this context?
Well, our position is that if he is aware of facts which would put him on notice of the suspect nature of the material, in this instance, on both occasions, he was aware that he was working in an adult theater. He was the manager. The film was advertised as being a triple X movie. Signs not allowing anyone under the age of 18 or 21, I don't recall the exact age factor. We contend that those are facts of circumstantial evidence, which in effect warrant the inference that he knew that it was obscene.
No, but the jury was instructed they could and should find him guilty if he had reason to know it was suspect. And if it's something suspect, it may or may not be obscene. The jury was instructed that they were to find that he knew it was obscene if he had simply reason to know that it was suspect.
The suspect nature of
yes.
the material. That's correct.
Mr. Rhodes, supposing that he knew that the name of the film were Carnal Knowledge, that would satisfy the intent requirement under the statute, even though the film, in fact, is not obscene, wouldn't it? Because that would put him on notice that it's suspect.
Not today, I don't think it...
Well, before this court's decision in holding it was not obscene, he should, by just knowing that was the name of the film, that would put him on notice, wouldn't it?
I don't think so.
You don't think that?
Wouldn't that raise
a suspicion? Do you don't think that would make a man suspicious that it might be obscene?
I think it would raise a suspicion and that he should inquire, yes.
But isn't that exactly what the statute requires? Just exactly that. If he has knowledge of a fact, namely that it's named carnal knowledge, which would put a reasonable, prudent man on notice of the suspect nature of the material.
Well,
and under the statute and under the instructions, then the jury is told to convict him.
Well, I would still contend and submit that to prove that would also prove his knowledge of the obscenity by circumstantial evidence.
Mr. Rhodes, I noticed the Georgia Court of Appeals at page A5 and A6 of the petition devoted only one paragraph to this claimed error in the instructions, and in the top of page A6 of the petition, it says one charge complained of was a quotation of the definition of obscene material as set forth in section 26-2101, which I think is the one that petitioner refers to. Is there any place other than in the record itself where there would be available a complete text of the trial judge's charge?
It's here in the joint appendix.
In the joint appendix, the full charge is in the joint appendix.
Page A7 of the joint appendix.
Thank you.
Now, I would like just briefly to make a comparison to a number of the cases Mr. Clutter has already mentioned, but in Rosen versus United States, notice of its contents. Notice of its contents was held sufficient. In Smith versus California, circumstances may warrant the inference that he was aware of what a book contained. It was held that eyewitness testimony that he had read the book was not necessary, but circumstances which would warrant the inference that he was aware of what the book contained despite his denial. In Michigan versus New York, it was held that in some manner aware was sufficient, in some manner aware of the character of the material. In Ginsburg, reason to know. And we think that the knowledge of facts which would put a reasonable and prudent person on notice of the suspect nature would be the same as reason to know.
Reason to know what?
Reason to know the nature of the material.
The suspect. He's guilty if he has reason to know it's suspect, then he, under the instructions, he's guilty of knowing that it was obscene. That hardly follows just as a matter of rational inference, does it?
Well, these cases I'm citing, Mr. Justice Stewart, make these statements that having notice or being aware of the character of the material.
Yes, but not being aware that the material is suspect.
Well, I fail to see a great deal of difference.
Mr. Rhodes, does the same statute govern apply to both the bookstores and motion pictures?
Yes, it does, John. Case of California versus Coons, which cert was denied by this court. It's reported 61 California Appeals 3rd, page 735, had a similar provision as determined by the appellate courts of California, that be aware of the character of the matter was the required scienter. In Hammond versus United States, it approved the reasoning in Michigan and Ginsburg, and that was in some manner aware. Now, reason to know. Now, to me, reason to know is still the same as having knowledge of facts that would put a reasonable and prudent person.
Well, one has to ask reason to know what. Let's assume, to take a ridiculous case, that your legislature should say that if you have reason to know that a book contains paper and printing on it, then that's constructive knowledge that it's obscene. So, and that clearly would be a wholly irrational and invalid law under the First Amendment.
Well,
now they don't say, and here they say, if you have reason to know it's suspect, then you know it's obscene. They don't say if you have reason to know it's obscene, then you know it's obscene.
Well, I think here they're saying if he has reason to know it's obscene, if he has reason to know...
The instructions did not say that, and the statute does not say that.
Here, in these cases, if they, Ginsburg and some of the others that I've cited, if he has reason to know, and if he has reason to know that it's suspect, he has some knowledge of it in either way.
That it's suspect. If he has reason to know it's suspect, he has constructive knowledge that it's suspect.
Well, if he has reason...
But these instructions didn't say that.
Well, I might go one step further and say that he would be put on notice and he would be required under the Georgia law, and I think under these other cases where it says reason to know, but would be put on notice to look further into the matter and to see, to make an analysis of what he's doing and determine whether or not he should continue what he's doing.
May I ask one other question on this subject? Do you think if Georgia had a law that said a man is absolutely liable for distributing obscene material, if it is in fact obscene, regardless of whether he had any knowledge whatsoever about its contents, that would be consistent with the First Amendment?
No, Your Honor.
You don't?
No. I think he must of necessity be aware in some manner of what he's doing, that he has to have some intent to distribute, exhibit obscene material.
I'm sorry, I had one other question, too. On your five-person jury point, are there other states, how many other states have five-person juries of which you're aware, do you know?
Well, the only one right off Louisiana that I can say.
That's the only other.
But I'm sure there are others. I believe there were others discussed in the Louisiana case or in a footnote. I believe there were a number of states mentioned that had less than 12. Now, the third question is the question of whether or not the film is obscene. If you have seen it, you already know what it contains. If you have not, you'll find that it is hardcore pornography under any standard. As the Court of Appeals of Georgia said, it's replete with all sorts of explicit sexual acts. There's nothing left to the imagination. Contains acts of masturbation, sexual intercourse, normal and perverted, cunnilingus, fellatio, lesbianism, anal sodomy. If it's been devised, it's contained in that movie. This film has already had one adjudication of obscenity, at least one, possibly more. But in a civil case brought in the Northern District Court of the Northern District of Texas, Judge Robert Hill was wrestling with the problem of whether or not it was obscene in a copyright.
I think we'll resume there at 1 o'clock, counsel, if you have anything further.
I'll be willing to waive.
Mr. Clutter, do you have anything further? Have you submitted, counsel? Yes. By all means, you have some time left.
If I may, in conclusion, say that we ask the court to reaffirm that obscene material is not protected by the First Amendment. We ask that the court view this film and rule that it is obscene. It has been so ruled on three occasions in the trial court in this case, by the appellate court, Court of Appeals of Georgia, and by the Northern District Court of Texas, and that you make it plain to those people in this country that would deal in this matter that they do so at the risk of being prosecuted in the applicable state and federal jurisdictions. Thank you.
Mr. Clutter, do you...
Yes, Your Honor. I just have one or two brief points related to that issue of scienter.
Yes. Mr. Clutter, if you win on any one of your issues, does it need the court go any farther?
No, sir. Not. I think if the scienter standard was in fact constitutionally insufficient,
How about the jury?
And if the jury in fact was constitutionally insufficient, I think although it might be helpful in a retrial of this matter to know whether the instruction should be given again, it's certainly not necessary at this point for the court to reach the question of what jury instructions would be proper should petitioner be retried before a six-person jury. That would, I guess, in a technical sense...
Well, if he's retried, he's automatically tried before six now.
That's correct, sir. There may be other counties in the state...
What would happen if we just decided that the movie was obscene?
That would remove our... If you decide as a matter of law that the movie is obscene...
Then we have to reach another question, then.
Yes, sir. With all due respect, what the petitioner is interested in is the opinion of a properly instructed jury on whether it's obscene.
Yes.
Before the question ever reaches Your Honors on whether or not the jury determination is constitutionally acceptable. And what we contend in this case is that we don't have a properly instructed jury, nor do we have a properly constituted jury to make that determination in the first instance before the question ever gets to this court. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument.